Hello and welcome to the tech segment of We're Drunk and We Know Things. This month we're doing M, and that obviously means magnetic. Hold it up before me again, I can't remember what it is. Magnetic storage media, that's it. Nailed it. We're in JB's smokehouse. I'm drinking Natty States. It's not true, I'm drinking Erdinger. Without, I'm not even drunk, I don't know what's wrong with me. And Rob is drinking snake oil.
Neck oil
by Beavertown. Delicious. Bastards. Enjoy.
That's what I do. I drink. And I know things.
So yeah, we're talking about magnetic storage media.
Yes.
Which was voted for by our beloved public.
All four of them.
Four?
It was us, wasn't it? Let's be frank.
Basically, I'm pretty sure we're the only ones who listen to this.
Us and Greg.
No, but we have hundreds of listeners. Hundreds of downloaders. We don't know how many of them actually listen to it. Anyway.
Yeah.
Magnetic storage media, which means we're talking about bits.
Talking about bits. Yay!
And bites.
Talking about bites.
And a fair bit of other stuff as well.
But talking about a fair bit of other stuff as well. Doesn't have the same.
Doesn't fit flow on a t-shirt, like does it? No.
Doesn't fit on a t-shirt. Maybe on my t-shirt. I am quite round.
Is it, you know, printed round the girth of your...
Yeah, absolutely. Round the... What I'm referring to is the We're Drunk and We Know Things guts these days.
So before we can get into it, we have to kind of try and understand what is the problem that magnetic storage media, which I'm not going to call MSM, like mainstream media, not the same thing.
Right.
What is the problem that it's trying to solve?
Saving stuff, innit?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the thing is that we as
what it's trying to solve is that we're halfway through playing Sonic, and then I have to go away from it, and then when I come back, it starts again from the fucking beginning because he doesn't save stuff.
That's a very specific, quite puerile example. I was thinking more, you know,
we
as a species generate massive amounts of knowledge and information. Some of it is,
Rob, you're making me blush.
Very puerile. witness this podcast, for example. Yeah. Some of it is earth-changing. Witness the second Matrix film.
Witness this podcast.
But
I honestly think this podcast could solve the Middle East crisis.
Over politics again. Warned you about this.
Sober Mike is political.
But over the course of human history, we have always attempted to preserve information for the sake of posterity, for future learning, or for transmission.
Saving it for butts. Oh, posterity, not posteriors.
Yeah, we're saving bits for butts.
Bits and butts.
That's your political slogan. And to be honest, when we're talking about magnetic storage, we're actually talking about a fairly specific point in time. So we're actually dealing with kind of the introduction of broadcast media, radio, music, TV and film.
Right.
And, of course, data.
Yes.
Computerized data. So the next thing we have to ask ourselves is, with all of the technology that's available in the world, why the hell did they decide to use magnets?
Because a room full of wax slates would have taken up a lot of room. Is it just room, basically? Is it the size?
Yeah, but, you know, why magnets? Why not polarize chipmunks or what have you?
Just get loads of chipmunks to remember what you've told them.
Yeah.
And then
pass it down by orally.
Probably, I'm going to go out on a limb because it was fucking easier if the alternative was chipmunks.
Well, I think the thing is, you've got a bunch of engineers who are used to working with electricity.
Right.
And electricity is magnetism's, like, cousin, once removed. So they're pretty familiar with these.
The old adage, electricity is magnetism's cousin, once removed. Talking to things that roll off the tongue.
Basically, the guys who were building this kind of stuff were already... They liked electricity.
Right.
And they liked magnetism by extension.
They sound fun.
I'll leave that as an exercise for the reader / listener. But also, we come into a situation where actually the stuff that they're trying to digitise is really easy to visualise as, say, for example, a waveform of varying intensity. So audio can be recorded as frequency and amplitude, right?
Yes.
So you've basically got this very easy to translate sound waves right. into electromagnetic waves.
Right.
And vice versa. They map onto each other fairly well.
Right. Yeah, okay.
So there's not a massive amount of transitioning. Whereas if you were trying to store, for example, sound waves on chipmunks.
Right.
You've got to train them, and then they're eating your shoelaces.
It's hard to hold them down while you're tattooing them.
Yeah, it's almost impossible.
Bitey little buggers.
And then you've got to keep them in order. So the fact that we can almost directly model one set of data using another set of techniques or technology
right,
is really helpful.
Right.
The other advantages to magnets or magnetic storage and magnetism is it's small.
Sure.
So you were right, actually, with the wax tablets.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
I should be doing this podcast.
It's also stable. You know?
Right,
cassettes
yeah, okay.
don't blow up when you drop them, unlike nitrocellulose.
Classic nitrocellulose, you bastards.
Well, it did have a habit of exploding.
What,
right?
they were saving
Early
stuff on
film
that before?
Stock.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah, of course, yeah, of course, yeah, yeah. sure. It's all the, yeah, yeah. Sure.
It's also quite tolerant of variance in heat. You know, not you know, up to extremes, but it can handle room temperature, outdoor.
Yeah, yeah.
Leave
hot,
it in your glove box,
day,
that
yeah.
kind of thing.
Yep.
Moisture.
The hot heat of having Aerosmith recorded on it.
Yeah, moisture. It's not particularly bothered by things like barometric pressure, so it works at high altitude, low altitude.
It doesn't,
in
like,
short,
soak up water and shit. Yeah,
yeah, it's a, a good medium.
Right.
And
magnets, a good medium. You should sell magnets.
Medium.
You could do very well for yourself.
Actually, there will be a link in the show notes to Rob's Magnet Store.
Rob's Magnet Emporium.
We're attracted to you.
Oh, shit. Why have you made your magnet emporium so creepy? You should have said, like, you would be attracted to our prices or something, not like, come and look at our magnets, I'm going to hit on you.
So one of the first forms of magnetic storage is actually magnetic wire.
Right. Isn't all wire magnetic?
Well, not
if
necessarily.
If it's made out of a magnetic metal?
If it's made out of a ferrous metal, then yes.
Magnetized wire.
And this was actually invented by... Well, it was first thought of...
By Mr. Mag.
By an American.
Mr. Nets.
Oberlin Smith.
Oberlin Smith.
Who I'm pretty sure is going to be producing our podcast in about 3 weeks' time.
Yeah, absolutely. Just let it fall out of the mind of the listener and then we'll use it. Yeah.
It's he came up with this concept in 1888. And then, because he was an American in 1888, he did nothing with it. And therefore, it was actually invented by a Danish inventor.
In 1888
Valdemar
Poulsen.
Who created
a
telegraphon.
Right. You say he was Danish?
He was Danish,
because
yeah.
his accent doesn't sound Danish.
What does a Danish person sound like?
He's like, there you go. Sorry, Denmark.
Wow.
Good
didn't take long for us to hit casual racism, did it?
They're not a race. If anything, it's mild xenophobia. Also,
Vikings, Mike. Vikings.
Okay.
Yeah. So anyway, he patented his invention to record onto magnetic wire in 1898.
Right.
So a whole, you know, 10 years later.
How do you record onto magnetic wire?
I'm glad you asked.
That wasn't a planned question. I just suddenly thought, super weird.
So this is...
And handy, because you can, like, spool it up.
Yeah, this is literally a spool of wire.
Right.
Which was run over magnets that would vary in strength. And you know that the key thing about magnetism is it can be transferred, yes?
Yes, sure.
So you've done
course.
The thing where you rub a magnet on
and
a spoon.
And you make a paperclip or whatever.
Like, oh,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
magnetic, yay. Yeah. Very exciting.
Christmas at your house is fun, isn't it?
Yeah, so cool. By Boxing Day, all the spoons are stuck together and nobody can find any fucking paper clips. But no, the idea behind magnetic wire is that you run the wire across a magnet that can vary its strength.
Right.
So you get a varying degree of magnetic force on the wire.
Yeah.
Because it's moving, that's then equivalent to time.
Is that how a magnetic key card works?
It's pretty much how everything we're about to talk about works.
Oh, good. Well, this is good then. Probably quite key. I shut up and listen then.
And effectively, it pulses, and it's good enough to get an analog signal onto the wire.
Right.
So, as we were saying before, a waveform of audio, for example.
Right.
Yeah. And most of the early magnetic wire stuff was used for audio.
Yeah.
Now, where this gets a little bit interesting is that this stuff had to move quite fast.
Right.
So it was actually moving at 61 centimetres a second.
In order to record it and to read it.
Yeah.
Right.
So 2 foot a second.
61. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
You're firing out of a
Which
cannon.
Means that to record an hour's worth of audio, you needed 2.2 kilometres of wire.
Fucking hell. Is that why we've got the producer on a hamster wheel this episode?
Yes. On the plus side, you can actually get that into quite a small quantity of space, right, because the wire was pretty fine.
Right.
You know, it didn't have to be very thick or
yeah,
tricky.
Yeah. It's pretty fair.
Fine wire. Whilst most of the world is dicking about with wires and realising that actually this stuff is probably quite lethal,
right,
because basically you've got something that's the equivalent of a cheese wire moving at...
Yeah, as I
say,
you don't want to get your fingers near that, yeah. Bitey little buggers.
The Germans,
right,
had started work on something that was very similar, but rather than using wire, they were using tape.
Right.
So this was a flat, non-magnetic compound covered in a magnetic substance.
Right.
But pretty much the underlying technology was the same. It would pass
sure.
over a head,
oh.
And that would pulse magnetic impulses onto the tape.
Yep.
The advantage of the tape over the wire is because it was a bit thicker, you could, you know, mm-hmm. do more with it.
Sure.
And also, it was probably a little bit cheaper to work with,
right,
a bit more robust.
Okay.
The trouble is that the Germans were doing this stuff in about, you know, the late 1920s. And by the time they got it kind of working, in about the late 1930s,
was,
shit had gotten a bit real.
Was there
for
some
the Germans.
Kind of trouble in Germany
yeah,
in the late
30s? There was a bit of an issue.
I'll
yeah.
look it up.
Went down.
I'll look it up.
As a result, they kept it all secret.
Right.
So the Germans are the only people who have magnetic tape at this stage. Everybody else
oh, right,
is still
okay.
using wires and
right.
chipmunks.
So what, even literally at the beginning of World War II then,
yeah.
the Germans are just happily using dictaphones.
Yep.
Sort of. And the English are like, somebody get me a length of wire. I need
yeah.
to send a message.
To the point that there's actually a famous story
telegrams,
of Eisenhower, who they intercepted some German tape.
Right.
And they recorded a message
right.
from Eisenhower onto the tape to kind of
right.
reverse engineer it and attempted to broadcast it, but they hadn't wiped the tape properly.
Oh, right.
So what you actually got was Adolf Hitler interspersed with Eisenhower.
Nice.
It's like
around.
The world's first cassette boy edit.
Amazing.
It's a mashup.
Very political mashup.
suffice to say, Eisenhower said that they were no longer allowed to use recovered German tape and had to invent their own.
Right, okay.
So after the war, tape goes mainstream.
Mainstream.
And you can see why, because it's cheaper to make than the wire. You can get more information on it.
Easy
you.
To spool up, easier to store, yeah.
Yeah, and what we progress through is basically the invention of the reel-to-reel tape recording system.
Yeah, okay,
which is like
sure.
the big reels of tape that
yeah,
you've
yeah,
seen
yeah.
in many, many movies.
And the reel-to-reel like on like the early computers, right? Like I've seen it in films, like
yeah.
in Doctor Strangelove. They've got those huge big cans of
yep.
film, which they are, or tape,
tape.
That they are, not film, tape, that they are recording data on. And that's all magnets, isn't it?
It's all tape, magnetic tape,
right.
yeah. And, of course, the invention of something that was officially called the compact cassette.
Right, yeah.
And this is the tape that if you were alive in the 80s or early 90s...
Or a massive hipster now.
Or are just a jerk now.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but...
Yeah, let's go back to tapes. Why? Oh. Why?
Should use mini-discs.
Should use mini-discs. We're not talking about optical media.
We're not talking about optical media. No mini-discs.
Oh, I've been warned, dear
no
listener.
CDs.
I've been warned. Not talking about optical media!
And the compact cassette, just to put it in context, means that it actually flows at 4.76 centimetres a second.
Right, which is a little bit more conducive to 61. Yeah,
yeah,
sure, of course.
It can actually go a bit faster.
Right.
Broadcast studio recordings using reel-to-reel would often do four times that speed.
Okay.
But still, it means that you can
the
basically...
benefit? Use less tape.
You use... If you go faster, you use
more
tape.
Tape yeah, yeah.
But
so
you get higher fidelity.
Right, so
you've got
better
more
quality,
points
sure,
to put
okay.
the data on.
Right,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah. It means that basically a cassette tape, you would require 171 metres of tape, give or take, to record an hour.
Right.
So inside every one of those C60s
yeah.
that you used to have
yeah, yeah.
was 171 metres
really?
Of tape.
That sounds like a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But I suppose it's so
but
thin.
It's really thin.
It's really, really thin, yeah. Okay, wow. Yeah.
And this is now plastic tape,
yep.
standardised, with a ferrous layer.
Right.
A lot of the early tape and the standard tape used iron oxide, as you'd expect.
Okay.
Rust.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
There were some that used chromium oxide.
Right.
It
was more expensive.
It was more expensive, but apparently it had slightly better data
okay.
retention quality. I don't
know. No doubt the cassette manufacturers argued and marketed, this is a new one because it's made of magnesium or something.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's the same basic technique as the wire.
Right.
Except now you've
got... A slow burner of a cop show.
What? Yes.
Hey-o!
You've got width.
Yep.
Girth.
Got that girth.
Which means you can have like two sides to the tape.
Yeah.
Or you can have four tracks on the tape.
Oh, yeah, because you had A and B, right?
Yeah.
Oh, four-track, eight-track.
Stereo, so you have four-track, eight-track?
Yeah. Do you know how that's when they made when Dave Grohl made the first Foo Fighters album? He recorded an eight-track recorder and just recorded all the parts himself.
Nice. I've completely lost my thread.
Did I just train of thought on my stupid Foo Fighters anecdote?
That's very interesting. Of course, there are some major landmarks. So you've got things like the Sony Walkman, which pretty much revolutionised the music industry.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, as much as Mr. Jobs would claim that he was the first one to do it, bollocks, Steve.
You just made a digital Walkman, son. Yeah, you made a digital Walkman, yeah. Jobs so overrated.
Yeah, never actually had a Sony Walkman.
Never had an original idea either. Never had a Sony Walkman?
No, I never had a Sony Walkman.
Oh, okay. That's a really weird thing to know about Steve Jobs.
Except they weren't Walkmans. They were portable cassette
I never
players.
Had a Sony Walkman.
I had a Sanyo, I think.
Yeah. Whatever was cheap from Argos, I think, is what I had when I were a wee lad.
Dodgy Japanese knockoff.
And then, of course, I had a mini display. But we're not talking, about optical.
And
it's so funny. That's such a good joke if you're us.
It's not. It's not a good joke. It's not just about audio, because, of course, we've got video.
Sure.
Likes of VHS,
Betamax,
and Betamax, both of which use magnetic tape.
Yep.
One of which used it right, and the other one was VHS.
And Betamax is better quality because it's a bigger cassette, which means more tape, which means. I thought Betamax was better quality.
Betamax was better quality.
Yeah, because it was a bigger cassette, which means more tape. No, I said Betamax.
No.
Oh well, I misspoke.
Anyway, but yeah, and of course VHS gets the backing of
porn,
amongst other things.
That's our DVD one.
Yeah. And we've got all of this tape flying around containing all of our audio, all of our music, all of our video, all of our porn. And apparently if you leave a cassette tape in the glove compartment of a car for long enough, it will automatically turn into the Best of Queen.
Yeah, absolutely.
But what about computers, Mike?
But what about them? Well, they've got them big old reel-to-reel jobs that I was saying about before. I've already told you this.
They have got reel-to-reels.
If I'm going to have to repeat everything I say, it's going to take a long time.
Before we can talk about computers, you need to understand something fundamental.
Oh, well, then we are fucked.
Could be here for a while.
We might as well call it a day.
Our producer has already finished his corn on the cob.
Jesus, our producer is just eating three burgers.
Sliders.
The sliders now. Three sliders.
Of course the sliders.
A corn on the cob. And nearly a whole thing of chips in... How long has this been going on for? 9 minutes. Jesus Christ. Well, okay. That's why they call him...
A third of corn.
Fat Boy McGiggins. That's not what they call him. That's not what they call him.
That's why they call him Fatback.
Fatback.
Right.
Truly, so you are the Samwise Gamgee.
The fundamental concept that you have to understand is the difference between analog and digital.
Yes.
Analog, as we've discussed, is the ability to record a waveform using, say, a pulse or what have you.
Right.
Digital is the ability to record data using, basically, bits.
Onto a hard state memory?
Onto anything.
Okay, so talking about bits.
Yeah, we're talking about bits. And bits are effectively a single state piece of information that can have one of two states.
Right.
It can only ever be in one of them.
Right.
Zero, one, on, off.
Okay, right.
Yeah?
With you.
And the rise of computing meant that we actually needed to store digital data.
Sure.
Because computers work with bits.
Yes, otherwise you'd have to have unless you've got a Commodore 64, you can't have an enormous fucking tape deck to save every single thing on at home.
Even then, the Commodore 64 programs were all stored as digital data.
Right, okay.
There was just a process to convert those into audio.
Right.
And the reason that computers need to store stuff is also quite important.
Right.
Because if you think of a computer as a calculator, which fundamentally they are.
Okay.
You know, calculator with delusions of grandeur.
Right.
There are three different points at which a computer needs storage. There is input, loading information or a program into the computer.
Right.
Which used to be done using punch cards. Or by simply typing it in.
Yeah.
Or by loading off an audio cassette.
Okay.
There is the space it needs whilst it's working. So these are things like, you know, if you're going to do a whole bunch of calculations on the back of an envelope.
Right.
You're probably going to be scribbling numbers all over it that you work on, refer to, come back
to. So it needs to save those numbers.
It's kind of like working memory.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah.
And, of course, there's output. So yeah. when you finally run the program, it produces something.
Sure, okay.
And
yeah.
you need to store that somewhere.
Yeah, right.
All of this means that computers were probably one of the first and biggest users of digital data storage ever. We never needed to do it before.
Yeah, we didn't have anything that needed to.
No.
Right.
And as a result, the computers early on didn't use wires, never really got around to it, and before they could use tape, they'd already come up with their own solution.
Right.
And this was the magnetic drum. So the computing industry is using tape to
right.
store data.
Fools.
Which they can do, and it kind of works. But,
right.
you know, tape is slow.
Sure.
And the reason it's slow is because you need to think in terms of how a computer needs to access information.
Right.
And there's a couple of phrases we use here. It's basically sequential access
right.
versus random access.
Random access.
So if you think
memory.
Back to your cassette player,
yes.
your Walkman.
So sequential is that because it plays one thing after the other.
Yeah,
and
so
then
you would really get into track 3 on the latest Foo Fighters album.
But you can't skip to it because you've got
no.
to play through it.
And when you get to the
sequence.
End, you have to rewind back to the beginning and then hit play.
So that is a problem because yeah. if you want to get one piece of information in a 25-mile piece of tape,
absolutely.
It'll take you fucking ages to get all the way through it to find it.
And this is why when you see in movies...
On top of this, boys.
You see in movies these big reel-to-reels on computers. Have you noticed they're always spinning really quickly?
Sure, yeah, of course.
Because they're literally just rewinding and fast-forwarding all the freaking time.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And there are a couple of ways around it.
Because you want to find someone's name. It takes you forever to find
yeah.
it.
One Crazy. Of the best ways around it was actually to have the data on multiple tapes.
Right.
Just duplicate it
oh,
so that you
so
can be rewinding that
it's
one
at the beginning,
whilst that one
yeah.
is there.
Oh, right, okay,
but
yeah, yeah.
it was really, really inefficient.
Sure, yeah, of course.
Especially given that
so like,
these
boys,
tapes are quite long.
We need to invent RAM.
No, we need to invent the ability to access something randomly, which is exactly as you say, to go straight to, or near as damn it, straight to that data without having to go through all the other data first.
Right, yeah.
And this is what's referred to as random access.
Yep.
And herein enters the drum memory system.
Right.
Drum. A drum memory
Pause for a drum roll that you'll put in the edit later.
You know I'm going to do a duck sound, right?
Yeah, wah.
A drum is literally that. It's a cylinder mm-hmm. of magnetized material.
Right.
And across the cylinder...
Is it a solid...
You have reed heads. Sorry?
Is it a solid... piece of metal
yeah
that's a magnet
these things are pretty freaking
in
hefty.
A cylinder yep
no it's a solid piece of metal or solid piece of something
right
coated with the same kind of magnetic stuff that we'd use on tape
oh yeah you'd be insane to make it out of solid iron wouldn't you just man this is why I'm not an engineer
but across the width of this you would right. have reed heads
sure
or write heads
the same as you would as on a tape reader
well a tape has one right
right but you'd have a number
a drum would have loads.
Across the drum
And it would basically have as many as there were tracks on the drum.
Right.
And depending on the circumference of the drum would depend
right.
on how much data you could get on a given track.
Right.
So if you wanted information off the drum,
right.
you would simply say, well, it's on track 3, so I want the third head.
Yeah.
And you basically spin the drum until you get to it.
Right, which is still fast. It's still sequential, but it's just split up into smaller pieces,
yeah,
so it's easier to get to.
It's much faster than a tape.
Sure, yeah, of course. Yeah,
because you've
absolutely.
Got 16, 24, 32, 64 heads
right,
on
right,
a drum.
Right, right, right.
And
who doesn't love
Go
head?
On.
Jesus.
Hey-o. Trouble is, drums are big.
Drums are big.
They're quite heavy.
That's a t-shirt.
And quite expensive.
Drums are big.
Drums are loud.
Drums are big.
If we take a decent example... This is your favourite company. They come up a lot in these sections. I just
right.
realised this. IBM.
Right.
What did they do, Mike?
They made computers for the Nazis.
Yes, they did. Let's get that out of the way.
Imagine what was on them drums.
So IBM created
bad
something
stuff.
Called
Oh, producer's
the...
looking at it like I'm crazy. Bad stuff. They were the Nazis, Robbie. I mean, pack. Shit. Edit this out. Ah!
Beep.
Just beep it. And that...
IBM invented something called the IBM 650.
Right.
Which was a full-size drum memory. It was huge.
Can I ask you something really
and
quickly?
It contained 8.5 kilobytes of usable memory.
Sorry.
8.5K.
8.5 kilobytes.
Yeah.
Wow. 8.5 kilobytes.
Yeah,
how
drum
big?
Memory, not huge. It was like as big as this
IBM.
Table.
Idiots.
And they can't see this table, the so they don't know if I'm lying or not.
Idiots because magnets. That's
well, no,
what that stands
it was,
for.
At the time, it was the best they'd got that wasn't tape.
I could have done better.
So, IBM being IBM, pushing the envelope.
Yep.
They decide that
morally
this is...
Morally and technologically.
Well, technologically at this point, it's 1957. So okay. War's behind us.
Right.
Hugo Boss is now just a fashion designer.
All of the German
and
scientists
IBM
are working...
And IBM are just making computers.
All the German scientists are working for NASA anyway.
Yeah. So in 1957, IBM pulled together something called the 305 RAMAC, R-A-M-A-C system.
Right.
Which is basically a mainframe.
Right.
But this mainframe comes with a special edition, the IBM Model 350 disk storage device.
The old chestnuts.
Also, have you noticed that IBM have the least original marketing department on the planet?
Yeah, I know. It's really,
so
really...
what should we call the 350 disk storage device?
So all the
device?
Names are very sexy, aren't they? So it's a disk. This is a disk storage now.
Yeah.
So is this a disk coated in magnetic... What's it, jobbies that spins around in a certain way?
I do believe he's got it. Now, disks actually consist of platters, so literal disks.
Right.
That spin.
I've broken open a hard disk before. A floppy disk, even. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so a hard disk consists of a platter, which is like that thing inside a floppy disk.
Yeah, yep.
That spin, but they also have heads that can move across the disk.
Like almost like a CD reader.
Yeah.
But we're not doing optical.
We're not. But it does mean that, whereas the drum, you only had the rotational speed of the drum.
Yeah.
With the disc, you've got the rotational speed of the disc.
And the movable head.
But also the movable head, which means all of a sudden you manage to double your speed to get to any point on the disc.
So it wasn't necessarily, initially, it wasn't necessarily about how much information you could save. It was about accessing it as quickly as possible.
How quickly can you get at it?
Ah.
Yeah. Because actually, we'd gotten quite good, certainly in the era of drum memory, at writing programs that were really effective at accessing memory faster.
Well, drums are big.
Yeah, they are.
Like we've always said, drums are big.
Now, within that, the platters have tracks. So each disc being a platter, and each track being a set of rings.
Right.
Basically.
Sort of like a vinyl.
Bit like a vinyl, except the vinyl is
one continuous spiral.
These are not,
is...
these are concentric.
Right, okay, yeah, right.
So you can quickly identify data and move the heads to any given point on a disk.
Right.
Okay?
Yep.
Right, final thing, the platters can be stacked.
Right, so you can have more than one platter within
boom,
each
boom,
disk.
Boom, 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 like a stack of pancakes.
Yep.
All of a sudden, you've got the ability to traverse side to side, it spins really quickly,
and up and down.
You can have, not up and down, because what you actually have per platter is a read head.
Oh, so you don't move the... Okay, right. Yeah. So you have a number of reheads that move from
in
back
these
and forth.
Early disks, anyway.
Right, okay. So they're still quite big things then, right?
Yeah, the IBM 350.
Right.
Catchy name, guys.
Sexy.
It was the size of two refrigerators.
Fuck yeah. And not, we're not talking about those mini fridges.
Two full
fucking
American...
Hell.
Americana-style fridges.
6 kilobytes of information on it.
3.5 meg.
3.5 meg.
Hence 350.
Incredible.
Yeah.
So you think I bought 128 gigabyte memory card from my Switch the other day.
We'll get onto that later on. Yeah, also, by the way, not magnetic storage.
No?
No. But 3.5 meg was amazing. It was so heavy that it needed to be delivered by special freight trucks and planes.
Bloody hell.
And
I think the problem is they were putting the trucks on planes.
Well,
that's a compounding issue.
Well, you've got to get it off the truck and onto the plane.
Right, yeah, okay.
It was so successful and so popular that IBM actually had to make a version that was double the data size.
So it was double the actual size?
Yeah, 7 meg.
Whoa!
That's more than an MP3.
What kind of people were buying this? Like banks and stuff?
Businesses who had large mainframe computers.
Right, okay. And this is still 1957?
Well, we're kind of through to about 1960-odd,
okay.
And we're going to continue just motoring on, because if we stop at every major development, we're going to be here all
night.
Sure,
no, of course.
Basically, hard drives were subject to massive amounts of expansion and improvement.
Mm-hmm.
In the early 80s, hard disks were pretty expensive. They were normally bought separate to a computer, and they were fairly low capacity, you know, tens of megabytes.
Right, okay. It starts becoming, once they've done that, they're happy with how quickly they can access it. So now it's all about making it smaller.
Yeah.
We need it smaller to fit in someone's home, in the advent of home computing and all that kind of stuff.
By the end of the 80s, we've got drives everywhere. Every computer comes with a hard drive in it.
I can see. Everywhere
they're totally standardized.
Yeah. Sure.
So, bear in mind that these hard drives are being used predominantly for input and output.
Yes.
Of
yep.
the computer programs.
Yeah.
So the other bit, the other third, is the in-process, the calculations on the back of the envelope.
Okay, yep.
And this was actually subject to its own revolution.
Right.
Because they were also using tape,
Is this what Intel Inside is?
No.
No, okay.
Also, now we have to play Bing Bong Bing Bong again.
That's what I said.
They've been using tape for this, which is really bad.
Yeah.
And they've been using drum memory, which is pretty bad.
Well, drums are big.
And they actually came up with a new technology to handle kind of the process memory called core memory.
Core memory.
Core.
Core.
Yeah.
Because it was hot.
Yeah. And this was working memory.
Right.
So it wasn't designed for persistent storage, although, ironically, it was really good at persistent storage.
Does that memory hold stuff for a short amount of time whilst it's working on something, and then it just wipes that, kind of says, well, I don't need it anymore because I'm not doing that task anymore?
Yeah, pretty much. So you don't need as much of it, because you can actually just kind of need it whilst you're working. And this was kind of useful, because it was actually made out of magnetic rings that could be charged to take a magnetic charge either clockwise or counterclockwise.
Right.
And you do this by literally wiring each ring into a set of electronic circuitry that would pass that charge in.
Okay.
And you could also then read that charge back out again.
Right.
So basically you've got your one or your zero.
Yes.
Clockwise or anticlockwise. One of the interesting things about core memory setups is that the act of reading it reset the state of the ring.
Oh.
So the minute you've read the bit off it,
it's just a bit.
It's gone back to off. It's gone back to zero.
Right, okay.
Whether it was one or not.
Right.
Which meant that actually using them gets a little bit complicated, because if you want it to stick around, you have to make sure that you write it back again afterwards.
Yeah.
They were also really, really, really expensive, to the point where when they came out, it would cost you $1 per bit. Per ring.
Yeah.
Per single one or zero.
Right.
Because these things were really delicate. They had to be made by hand. And
Jesus.
They were, despite many attempts to automate the process,
they
were mostly handcrafted.
Jesus. And this is when you tell me that there's 40,000 of them in my phone now and blah, blah,
no,
blah.
No. Basically, $1 per bit means that in today's terms, we'd be looking at $8, $16, $32 or $64 per byte. Depending on what you're using. So your phone's memory is 64-bit.
Yep.
Therefore, $64 per byte of information if you wanted to use core memory.
Bloody hell, okay.
The price did drop over time. It got down to about a cent per bit. But that's still pretty freaking expensive.
Yeah. When you're talking about decent-sized files,
The nice thing is that they were really small.
Right.
So each bit required a ring and a matrix. So like 1 kilobit, which is basically about 128 bytes in an 8-bit system, needs 1024 rings, so you get a 32 by 32 grid.
Right.
And, you know, that would be it.
But they still, when you need that many, they still end up being quite large.
They were fairly chunky, but compared to, say,
a drum.
A giant drum spinning away in the corner.
Drums are big.
Yeah, drums are big. And because they were almost completely electronic, there was no mechanics to them, they were really fast.
Sure, okay.
And you could read data randomly out of them and write back really
quickly.
Okay,
you haven't got a reader ahead moving around and all spinning and all that kind of shit.
Yeah. Now, core memory...
Presumably didn't break as easy as well without as many physical moving mechanical
actually,
parts.
Interestingly enough, they didn't break as easily, but there were a lot of very, very delicate circuits that ran to it to make it work.
Okay, sure.
And if you get a problem with one of those, you're kind
the
of
whole
a bit screwed.
Thing's fucked, yeah.
Yeah. Core memory was superseded by semiconductor-powered transistor technology that came about in the 70s.
Okay. So give me a quick explanation of how a semiconductor and a transistor works.
No, because we're not going to talk about that, because it's not magnetic storage.
Fair enough.
It uses semiconductors.
Touché, Rob.
Yeah, so we're not talking about transistors or T.
Or T.
Oh, God. We could do transistors for T. We'll see.
I think we should do transformers and transformers.
Now, interestingly enough, core memory still has... a bit of a legacy. So when we're debugging a computer program, one of the things that programmers will often do is take a copy of the entire memory of the system, a snapshot, and that's still referred to as a core dump.
Is that so if everything goes to shit, you've got a copy of it to put back on there?
It's so that you can read the state of the memory as it was at that point.
Right, okay, yeah.
So you can see all the workings out that were going on.
Yeah.
But even though we haven't used core memory since about the 80s, we still call it a core dump.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. biblical tradition thing that sticks around. So going back to the bits.
The bits.
The on and off.
Yes.
How do you turn an on and off into, like, a song? It says, oh, well, these are all the bits that say on and these are all the bits that say off. I'm going to read this and say, oh, actually, that is Bohemian Rhapsody.
Okay.
How does that translate from one into the other?
It's a good question. Our producer is just looking at you like you've just asked for the second coming or something. Fundamentally, it comes down to speed and the speed with which we can interact with on and off.
Right.
So, firstly, if you get a number of ons and offs, say sure. 16 together,
yeah.
you can represent a number, right? And that number can be quite big.
Right. Okay, yeah.
So that's step one.
Okay.
So we've gone from 0 and 1. If we string 16 0 and 1s together, we can go up to like 2.5 million or something.
Okay. So those ons and offs in that sequence represent numbers.
And that's one byte.
Right.
Right. The next thing you need to bear in mind is that when we're dealing with digital audio, as a simple example, we're actually dealing with bytes at an incredible number per second.
Okay.
So, are you familiar with the concept of hertz? It's literally the number of calculations per second.
Okay, right, yeah.
And say, for example, a modern CD-ROM is a 16-bit, 44,000 hertz recording medium.
Right.
Which means that for every second of audio, you have 44,000 bytes. Each one of which made up of 16 bits of information.
And is that per second of...
Per second.
You're right, okay.
Of audio.
Of audio, yeah, sure.
So, 44,000 samples.
Right. Per second for a 3.5 minute song.
And what happens when you digitise audio is you take the audio at a given point in time.
Right.
And you say, actually, for this second of Bohemian Rhapsody, that slice is that frequency and that amplitude.
And
the slice after it is that frequency and that amplitude.
And
the slice after it is a lower frequency and that amplitude. Now, if you get those 44,000 samples and squish them all together, it will sound exactly as if you were hearing it.
Right.
This is exactly the same trick that the movie industry worked out with 24 frames a second.
Okay, that makes sense.
That you don't have a continuous flow, you have still,
all laid on top of each other, moving at a ridiculous rate. Okay, right.
So that is how you get from bits to what is effectively an analog system.
Right, okay.
The actual process is kind of cool because it's referred to as going in, it's analog to digital conversion.
Right.
Which is what we're doing right now.
Yep.
Going out, it's digital to analog conversion. DAC.
Nailed it.
Anybody who's...
Oh, that's what DAC is.
Yeah, anybody who's got high-end audio equipment will have a DAC.
So what's
a
FLAC?
And we'll probably bore you about it at length at
party. A FLAC? Is that audio, something audio conversion?
FLAC is a lossless form of recording audio.
So, wait, frequency lossless audio conversion?
Yeah, something like that.
Cool. Nailed it. Okay. Thank you.
We can talk about that in... M when we do MP3.
What, next 26 episodes from now? Jesus. Okay, I look forward to it. I'll write down
the
questions.
When we do Og Vorbis.
The O, we... Orbis?
Og Vorbis.
Og Vorbis.
They're the guys who invented FLAC.
Oh.
Anyway.
Okay.
So back to our hard disks.
Back to hard disks.
Our hard disks are about to get not so hard.
We're talking about floppies.
Yeah.
Excellent.
It's all about to get a little bit childish.
Prepare yourself for a lot of dick jokes.
But before we get into that, so hard drives
are
become
standardized. Well, no, to be fair, you're not going to get into anything with
They're
a floppy.
Everywhere.
Start pushing rope.
Just thumb it in.
Thumbing in a soft one.
And... Because hard drives are improving year after year, and they actually improve according to something called Kreider's Law. Do you remember, have we talked about Moore's Law? I think we did in that weird thing where we did the future, according to me.
It does, yes.
Yeah, so Moore's Law says that the number of transistors on a circuit will double every year.
Right,
so
okay.
Basically, computers will get twice as fast every year.
Sure, Roger Moore's Law.
Kreider's Law says that the...
Isn't Kreider the robot out of Red Dwarf?
That's Crichton.
Oh, yeah, right.
No, it states that the density of information you can store on a disk will double every 2 to 4 years.
Right.
Crider, less sure of himself than Moore.
Yeah, apparently.
2 to 4, give or take.
Hitched
unless it's a bad
bets.
Year, in which case it might be 5.
They should call that Crider's being a pussy.
Well, what it actually means is that disks are getting the ability to hold more and more information on a single platter.
In, right.
Like a square inch of disk
sure.
can hold more stuff as time
right.
goes on.
Right.
Which means that our friends at IBM... Again.
Idiots big as magnets.
Leading the charge.
Well, they got all that blood money, haven't they?
Realise that actually what they really need... I mean, this hard drive shit's amazing, but what yeah. they really need is something that's portable.
Sure.
Something that they can carry around and mail and you know...
Yeah, yeah. They could send yeah. information,
that doesn't
huge swathes of information...
That loading like something that's the size of 2 fridges onto a plane.
Shitload of reams of paper or whatever, yeah.
Yeah. And so they were set up with a team to try and work out how to load information into one of their computers. They tried using tape, and they couldn't get it to work.
Right.
In a sufficiently portable, fast enough way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the team that were working on hard drives switched, and they came up with the 23FD.
Another sexy name.
Again. I mean, honestly, the 23FD. I mean, the 24FD was lovely, but the 23FD, Jesus.
Jesus Christ.
This was the floppy disk drive system, and it was an 8-inch disk.
An 8-inch floppy?
8-inch floppy.
Jesus Christ.
So this was a read-only disk. Once it had been encoded,
that
you couldn't
it.
Write
that
back
your,
to
that
it.
That was your lot.
But you could read from it, and it held 80 kilobytes of data.
Ooh. 80 kilobytes.
Yeah,
now, I've
decent.
Seen them. They're like the size of like a single LP.
Oh, 8 inches.
Yeah. So like, we used to have them back in day. It's making a very visual joke about what 8 inches is. Your weapons.
I move my hands more than 8 inches apart because I'm a man.
So that's what we had at school back in the day, right? Did we at school back in the day, the BBC jobbies? And the BBC computers,
no.
They had the 8-inch
They did
watsits.
Not.
No?
No. But... What then went on to happen was, after IBM had invented it, Memorex, in 1972, invented something called the 650.
Right.
Clearly, the marketing guys from Memorex were poached from IBM.
Yeah, clearly. The 650! Do they seriously have 649 iterations before that fucked up?
No.
So dumb. Anyway.
But this was the first commercially available read and write floppy
disk. See, when I used to buy discs, and I used to buy CDs and all sorts of stuff, Memorex... generally my go-to.
Yeah, they make good shit.
Big name.
Where
big
are they
name.
Now?
Yeah, exactly. Where are you now, Memorex, you fucking piece
no,
of
really,
shit.
Where are
Sorry.
They now? Anybody, has anybody heard from them recently?
That is true. Have we, is there a funny
like,
smell coming from their apartment?
Into, oh,
it's true.
Eaten by their own cat. Yeah, so the Memorex 650, and we're now in about 1972-ish, could right. hold 175 kilobytes.
Jesus.
So it's got more space.
Get it sorted, man.
And
guys.
You can read and write.
Right.
At this point,
and read.
Floppy disks start to get smaller.
Small floppies. Talk about small baby floppies.
So, to start with, they shrunk to the 5 1/4 inch micro flop, mini floppy, sorry. If we make it through this, I'll be amazed.
The mini floppy.
5 1/4 inch mini floppy, and that is the one that you remember from school.
Right, okay.
Do you remember getting mini floppies?
It's because
at school?
The thing is, well, I was smaller, so it looked bigger in my hands.
I mean. Wow. And they continue to get smaller.
Right.
So we then have the 3-inch compact floppy.
Oh.
And
it's easy to carry around in your purse.
And then, because sometimes this is just what happens, it got a bit bigger.
Okay. That's nice.
And we standardised on the 3.5-inch floppy disk.
Right.
And this became the standard. This is the floppy disk
the
that
industry
you will
standard.
Remember.
Yes.
So there are two floppy disks that everybody remembers. One yep. of them is the big one that is actually floppy.
Yep.
And the other one is small.
With the little metal slider on the top.
Plastic with a metal slider on the top.
And that little button that means
yeah.
you could read
it. If anybody's
or
not
or
sure
write.
What I'm talking about, it's the save icon in Microsoft Word.
Yeah. And it had that little thing, the plastic toggle on the
oh,
bottom.
Oh, yeah, you could make it read-only.
Read-only or read-and-write.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
And sometimes you'd buy discs and they'd come with that without the slider, so you couldn't make it writable.
Mm.
But you could fool it, by putting tape over the hole.
Ah, so it was
same
literally
thing
just
with cassettes,
the hole.
Right? You could snap the tabs
yeah, yeah,
out
yeah, of course.
So
yeah,
you
yeah,
could record
stopping.
On them.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it's a simpler time.
Jesus, we are old.
Now, the trouble is, the floppy disk had a good innings.
Right.
It could, at the end of its life, hold up to about 2
meg. There's only so much you can do with a floppy before eventually complaints are heard.
Could hold up to about 2 meg, which was still not much because computer programs
were
bigger.
Was it only 2 meg?
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
1.44 was the standard.
I'm sure you used to put Doom on it and stuff.
Yeah, Doom came on 2, I think.
Well, then, why do you have so much fucking trouble porting it onto the Switch then, bastards?
I remember installing Microsoft Word 6, which came on 6 floppy drives.
Amazing.
6 floppy disks.
Amazing.
And to be honest, they discovered that they could actually do something that we're not talking about. They could use lasers and put like megabytes worth of data on a CD.
What? That's optical.
Yeah, so we're not talking about it. But unfortunately for the floppy disk, the CD-ROM pretty much spelled its end.
Yeah, pretty much, right, yeah. As soon as you had a writable CD, who gives a fuck about floppy disks?
Well, writable and
Well, they didn't really, because isn't a mini disk really just a floppy disk?
No. It's just the worst of all worlds.
It's like an optical floppy disk.
Yeah.
And we're not talking about optical.
The other thing that killed it is the other thing we're not talking about, which is transistor memory. AIDS. So
transistors.
compact flash, SD cards, USB keys.
Sure.
And let's face it.
And that's transistor memory.
Yeah, that's transistor memory, but that is pretty much, these days, the reason nobody uses floppy disks is they're like, oh, have you got a USB key?
Sheet capacity, and they're too big. Yeah.
If you wanted the, like, the moment when we started chipping the letters out on the tombstone of the floppy drive, it was in 1998 when Apple released an iMac that didn't have a floppy disk drive.
I remember seeing that in Jobs and then being like, you are fucking mental to do that.
Steve
Jobs was like, no, man, I'm an asshole.
Yeah.
That's it. I've just summed up the whole of the film Jobs. People being like, you shouldn't do that. And him being like, fuck you, I'm an asshole.
Rich asshole.
That's it.
Genius asshole.
Yeah.
And they've continued to do it, by the way. You know, they removed the CD drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they removed the headphone socket. I'm waiting for the point where they remove the device altogether and you're just literally paying them hundreds of pounds a year for nothing.
It'd be easier.
No idea. You just get a badge. It's not even a real badge. They remove
that. The Apple Care package would be just about as good.
Yeah.
I don't even know if that's true. It might be really good. I've never nothing I've ever had that's Apple that's broken, to be honest. So
let's have a quick spin, because CD-ROM, the floppy has risen and fallen.
The floppy has risen and fallen. Beautiful. When once it was large, it then was small.
And then it was for naught.
It really stuck it out, or didn't.
The modern hard drive, however, stuck around.
It did.
Because this was not superseded by optical memory.
But they just made it littler?
They, to be honest, made it a bit smaller, a bit faster, more efficient, and it continued to get more and more dense.
To the original iPods, they had a hard drive in, right?
Yep.
You could feel them like spinning around. I mean, I think now it's solid state, right? It's got to be transistor now.
Yes, which we're not talking about.
Which we're not talking about, but you could feel it spinning around inside the original iPods.
They had a laptop-size...
That's why a bit chunky.
Yeah, laptop-size hard drive in them.
There's a hard drive with a screen on it, pretty much, isn't it?
And at this point, we're dealing with modern hard disks, and most of them spin
caveat.
At a speed between 4,500 and 10,000 RPM.
Wow.
So they're pretty quick.
Pretty quick.
And they're made in exactly the same way as tape was. Non-magnetic, coated with magnetic stuff.
Sure, because you'd be insane to make it out of solid iron.
Which has given rise to the techie community often call these devices spinning rust. Because that's literally
Got a problem with the old spinning rust. Yeah, is that techie people trying to sound like car mechanics?
A little bit.
Got a problem with the old spinning rust.
Especially given that they haven't actually used iron oxide for generations. They're all made out of some weird pseudo-magnetic compound now.
Jesus.
But ho-hum. So, modern hard disks, kind of cool, because they can transfer up to about 80 megabytes of data per second.
Wow, okay.
Which is pretty fast.
Yeah, pretty quick.
Except it's not, because RAM, that we're not talking about, is 100,000
times... Remind me why we're not talking about RAM again?
Because it's transistor memory.
Right, okay, yep.
100,000 times faster.
100,000 times faster?
Yeah.
So, like, a micro SD card is 100,000 times faster than a...
Not quite, but the RAM that's in your system that now replaced core memory, is now the working memory in the back of your envelope, runs at 100,000 times, give or take, the speed of the hard drive that stores all the data.
Yeah.
And even hard drives themselves, unfortunately, are starting to get chipped away at.
Right.
They're
starting to lose their ardour.
They are, because there's a variant of transistor-based storage technology that we call SSD.
Right.
Solid state storage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's also another variant called NVMe, Right. But basically, these are transistor memory, yep. not magnetic.
Okay.
And they have a couple of advantages. The same advantages that transistors have always had, i.e. they're faster in terms of getting data in and out.
Yep.
They are, because they're transistor-based, they're not subject to the same kind of sensitivity to knocks and what have you. Because imagine if you've got something that's spinning 72,000 times a second.
You can't really run around with it jumping up and down in your pocket or whatever. Yeah, sure.
So, with the old iPods,
if you went for a run with one in your pocket, would it fuck up because it's jostling around?
Well, no, because what used to happen was they used to put a lot of work into... You remember when CD Mans came out?
Yeah.
And you used to get CD Men.
Yeah.
Not sure if that's the plural.
And every time you knocked it, it would skip the CD.
Yeah, or you got a good one that had anti-jog protection.
Right.
And all that was basically a little RAM chip, a little memory chip. Mm. So it would read a whole bunch of the song into
memory.
And have it preloaded. And that's how the iPod worked. And they would also have protection, so that the iPod's later versions would have an accelerometer.
Yes.
That if it detected that you had knocked it,
yeah.
it would actually kind of freeze.
Oh, wow.
Until
to protect
the knock
itself.
Was over.
Yeah. Wow.
And the same technology actually made its way into hard drives and laptops, for example.
Yeah, because they've got the... Yeah, sure, I've seen that.
So the SSD, bless it, is pretty much eating the hard drive's lunch.
Right. It drinks its milkshake.
These days, yeah. Because they're faster and they're more robust.
Sure. Makes sense.
Right. At this stage, do you have any questions about the hard disk? Because we haven't actually talked about how the hard disk really works.
Well, presumably... It's the same thing with the bits and the bytes.
Exactly.
The ons and offs, and it spins and reads it, and then, yeah.
So what you have is arranged
it's like,
in the
it's
tracks.
Like a, it seems like it's a combination of drums, tapes, same kind of concepts, but all kind of mixed together, isn't it?
Exactly so.
Right, yeah.
I'm glad to see you've been paying attention. Much easier when you're sober.
Not as much fun, though. For me.
You may. So as it went so well during Linux...
Yeah,
we decided it's not going to be a regular fixture,
right.
because that would be just shoehorning it in for the sake of it.
Wait, did we do a quiz during Linux?
We did.
Okay.
We did, is it a Linux distribution or is Rob having a laugh?
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Remember the one I completely failed to prepare for?
Yeah, I remember that.
Unlike last time, this time I have prepared.
Joke's on you.
And therefore, we have a new segment for this month only that I'm calling Disc or Dick.
Cue jingle.
We don't have a jingle.
Oh, well, that's...
They wouldn't record one. Honestly, nobody's returning my emails.
Shocker, that. It keeps sending on weird requests every month.
So, basically, I have a list of magnetic storage media brands.
Right.
And I would like you to tell me whether or not they are real or whether or not I'm yanking your chain.
Hey-o! Yanking my floppy, as it were.
So...
No, that's...
No.
Oh... He's just crossed over into something. Okay, let's
So
start.
We're going to start.
Right.
Okay, and all you have to do is say, yes it is, no it isn't. It's literally 50-50.
Okay.
We're going to start with the Jazz Drive.
The Jazz Drive? I'm going to say yes.
Yes.
Yes, it isn't a memory company. It's not. No, it's not a real one.
It is a real one.
Shit!
It was made by the iOmega Corporation.
iOmega.
It's like Omega with an I in front of it.
They were like, let's call ourselves a major.
The Jazz was, by and large, a complete commercial failure.
Was it a transformer that had a white guy doing an impression of a black person doing the voice?
Would have been more useful.
Right. Okay.
No, it was basically, if memory serves, it was like a mini hard disk.
Right.
But it was terrible.
How? Okay.
Because it held 100 meg, so it was bigger than a floppy drive.
Right.
But again, at the same time, you've got CD-ROMs coming, and they were kind of kicking
so it was
ass.
Defunct before
and
it even.
The reason I think it failed is because they spelt it with one Z.
What?
Yeah.
What the fuck is wrong with it? They should have called it a 94F, and it would have been a roaring success.
IBM's got the patent on the 94F.
Oh, typical. They've patented every
and
combination.
And all the numbers.
Two-digit numbers and letters. Yeah. Fucking idiots.
Okay. Next up.
Right.
The Kitty Hawk.
The Kitty Hawk. That is the name of a plane.
It is.
I want to say Amelia Earhart's plane. Maybe.
I thought the Kitty Hawk was
plane.
The airfield where the Wright brothers flew theirs.
I don't know. But anyway, I'm going to say no.
That is a storage device.
The Kitty Hawk.
The Kitty Hawk Micro Drive was manufactured by
Hewlett-Packard. A little bit like the name of a dildo as well, but okay. By Hewlett-Packard.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
And it's basically a micro drive was kind of cool because it was like a hard disk, but it fit in a compact flash slot.
Right.
So in a camera or similar.
Sure. Right.
And yeah, Kitty Hawk was the airfield where they launched the Wright brothers' first plane.
All right.
But also an HP one. Okay, the third one.
Right.
And so far, you're zero for
two. No, it's not. I'm just keep saying no.
The T-Rex.
No, it's not. Because it would be mean to T-Rexes because they can't reach keyboards.
It's not.
Yes!
You caught me.
Vindication, thy name is me.
Although, for a bonus point, what about the Velociraptor?
No, also no.
No, the Velociraptor actually is a brand of hard disk. It's made by Western
John
Digital,
Hammond,
I think. And the Velociraptor spins at, you know, I said that they span at 72,000 RPM.
Yeah.
Velociraptor spins at 120,000.
Oh, wow.
Like, really fast.
So they called it Velociraptor because they were quick.
Yeah.
It means like, quick thief or something.
Okay, number four. And so far, you've got one.
Yeah, the best one.
The pocket zip.
I'm going to say yes.
Is actually
yes.
another storage device that was made by the Omega guys.
Right.
Because before they made the Jazz Drive, they made something called the Zip Drive that was really, really successful.
So is this like the compression
thing? Then they
made
a smaller version.
Did they make WinZip?
No.
Okay.
They made a smaller version.
Did they invent Zips?
No.
All right, well.
Yeah, I'm not sure who invented Zips.
Mr. Zip.
That might be our only option when we get to Z,
had to
by
have
the
been,
way.
Must have had to be Mr. Zip. You want to go
Zippy.
You want to do Zips
well,
for the tech
what
segment.
What other technology?
Zips. Oh, you mean zip drives or zips?
No, zips. What other technology begins with
yeah, when
Z?
We get to B, we can do buttons.
When we get back to B, we might.
If we do V, we can do Velcro. That's pretty cool. It'd be great to listen to on a podcast.
Welcome to the Daily Fastening with Mike and Rob.
Yeah.
This week we're talking about YKK zips,
when we get
which
to
are
Z,
commonly
we
inserted in anoraks, like the one I am wearing right now.
When we get to Z, we should just go to haberdashery. just be like pockets in there.
Okay, so the pocket zip drive was a thing.
Right.
The Zap Drive. ZAP.
No.
It was not a thing.
Yes.
I was hoping that you might get all caught up in Zip.
I'm on a roll. No, I'm on a roll. I'm on a roll now.
Okay, and the final challenge.
The final challenge.
The 6-inch floppy.
Now, we had a 7.5. We had a 5.5. And we settled on a 3.5.
We had a brief dalliance with 3.
We had a brief dalliance with 3.
Was the 6-inch floppy?
We felt the 3 was too small. If it was going to be floppy, we needed that extra half inch.
I mean, 6 inches and floppy seems ambitious.
I'm going to go with fake. That is not.
It is not.
Ah,
it's just my childish attempt to wrangle a bit more tittering from
wanna,
you.
Want to milk one more dick joke out of this?
Yeah, pretty much. Just yeah, milk right. one more.
Milking them dick
oh,
jokes.
Oh, wow.
Milking them hard.
Happy New Year, people. Welcome back. So that's our quiz. I think keeping score, you got 2 wrong.
And the rest right.
And you got 4 right.
That's right.
So, you know, that's...
Clearly I've been listening.
That's better than bad.
Yep, more than half.
Right, so, are you ready to have your mind blown?
I am.
With the amazing fact.
I really hope I can.
We kind
it.
Of touched on this already.
Sure.
And it's not a 6-inch
floppy. Oh, yes, I was so... just about to be there, go on.
So, we said before that your average hard disk spins at 72,000 RPM. 7,200. 7,200 RPM.
Yes.
Yep. And the platters in a standard desktop computer hard drive are 3.5 inches across.
Right.
Yeah, 8.8 centimetres.
Yep.
Near enough. Can you remember the formula to calculate the circumference of a disk if you know its diameter?
Pi r squared.
Good work.
Whoa!
Also, it's actually 2 pi r, but...
Is it really?
Yeah, you were close enough. Pi r squared's the area, I think.
Okay.
I was amazed how quickly I...
It's the only one I can remember. That and Pythagoras. Got them.
Yeah.
We got them, guys.
So,
platters
on a standard hard drive have a circumference of 27.92 centimetres.
27.92, right.
Near enough, 28 cm.
Now, let me write this down. Not really.
Do you need a pen?
They don't know that. The listener doesn't notice.
So
I'm writing it on the chalkboard.
If you were to run
to me.
A standard desktop hard drive at full speed,
right,
for a minute,
right,
the outside edge of that disk will travel 200,000 centimetres or 2 kilometres.
In a minute?
In a minute.
Wow. Bloody hell. So 2 kilometres, if you put a little point, you put a tiny little man on the edge of the disk, and
yep,
span him around for 60 seconds, was it 27.92, whatever?
Yep.
Times 7,200.
Yep.
2.5 kilometres.
That's
mental. How do the motors not just burn out all the time?
Because the platters are really light.
Okay.
But one of the interesting, not interesting enough to
is
make it
is that why you
amazing.
Have to have a big-ass fan in a computer, though, because you've just got so much shit moving around?
Nah, that's all to do with the processor and the fact that it's pushing electricity through very, very tiny circuits.
It's trying to push on them floppies through the small channel. Thumbing in a soft one. Okay.
No, what's really interesting is because modern hard drives are actually very mechanical still, they have a mean time to failure of give or take 2.5 years.
Is that another reason that SSD is taking over, because it's cheaper to manufacture? It's less difficult because it's got
actually
less
more expensive
bits?
To manufacture, more expensive to buy, but it's much less likely to fail because it's not
so
spinning around at 7,200 times a second.
Sure, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
Okay, so does this mean with SSDs and transistor-based storage that we have seen the end of magnetic storage?
Sounds like it. Sounds like when they make the process cheaper to make the SSDs.
Well,
there's no definitive answer. We don't know the future.
I think inevitably they're probably on the way out.
Yeah.
But right now, disks are kind of dropping off.
Right.
Tape. You know, think back to the beginning of this podcast,
is
still very much in use.
And really?
It's used for data archiving.
Oh,
so
right,
a situation where you just have to write the data but don't really care about reading it in any massively random
order.
It's
just super cheap and...
Yeah, because it's dirt cheap.
Right.
It's really robust.
Yeah.
And also, they're getting quite big. Because HP, Hewlett-Packard again, maintain the standard for tape storage, which is something called their LTO series.
Right, okay.
They currently store up to 6.25 terabytes on a single cartridge.
Right.
And these cartridges are about 10 centimetres square.
Oh, wow.
So they're literally
and
like...
there's a tape cartridge.
Yeah, yeah.
Fucking hell. So the density... So Croydon's law... Density of the data.
Applies to tape as well, to the point that they're expecting to release in, I think, about 2-3 years' time. It's like two generations away.
Yeah.
A tape, same form factor, that will be able to hold 48 terabytes of data.
Fucking hell. So that's super good, well, just for everyone that needs a shitload of data. So things like banks and corporations.
And the nice thing is that you back all this stuff up. You can put that tape somewhere safe, and if you keep it at a stable temperature, keep it away from EMPs.
And you can just stack the fucking things up, can't you?
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
You've got that data more or less forever.
Yeah.
The other thing that we've seen a rise of is a weird combination of transistor memory that we're not talking about and traditional hard drives into what are called hybrid drives.
Oh.
So these are actually drives that contain an initial read-write segment, which is really fast memory, and they're backed by a massive amount of storage in the form of a spinning platter.
Okay, so you've got the random access for the bits you actually want, but then actually long-term storage of your data on a spinning platter.
Yeah, yeah. And smart software means that it can work out that, for example, the first thing you do every morning is wake up and
that sounds a little bit like what you were saying about with the RAM and the hard drive on the iPod.
Yeah.
A little
exactly
bit like,
but they've started building it into the drive now.
Right, okay.
So you've got buffered drives.
Oh, wow, okay.
Which are balancing out. And Apple, again, funnily enough, are pushing the market on these in iMacs. You'll get hybrid drives in iMacs.
Oh, wow.
Because, actually, SSDs are great, but buying an SSD that's more than about 512 gig is really expensive.
Yeah, they do get silly expensive.
Like,
how
a 2 terabyte
SSD
is £800-900 at the moment.
I was looking at the just the SSD cards for the Switch the other day, and they're like £90.
Ah, that's the SD cards.
Not the same?
No, slightly different. Also, transistor memory, so we're not talking about it. And finally, we still have in data centres and computers around the world the use of something called RAID.
I'm sorry?
RAID.
RAID?
Not the bug spray.
No. Obviously, the Indonesian martial arts film.
No.
Okay.
Although, guess what I'm watching when I get in? A can of bug spray.
Hey-oh!
No, RAID is the concept that you can have. It literally stands for a redundant array of inexpensive devices.
Right.
And it's basically a way of controlling the way that we write data to disks, even though we know that they're shit and slow and going to fail.
Right.
So that if one disk fails, we can swap it out, put it back in.
Right.
And it kind of spreads the data out across multiple disks so that there's no one bit on any one disk. It makes it incredibly reliable.
Right.
And because disks are getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper and cheaper and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, actually, the more drives you have in a RAID array, the more performant it becomes.
Yeah.
And RAID 10, so 10 disks or powers of multiples of 10 disks in an array, is still a really popular way to store data for servers.
Right. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. I mean,
it's cheap.
It's effective and it's cheap, yeah. Yeah. So they are not necessarily on the way... Well, they are partially on the way out, but because of the nature of them being so inexpensive, they'll kind of be prevalent for a little while.
They are not going easily into that good night.
It's because this isn't a CD floppy situation where CDs are just the same amount of money, you just swap them straight out. Cool.
That's it. The nice thing about doing magnetic storage is we don't have to really do the whole, ooh, what's coming in the future, because, well, clearly nothing. They're going to get replaced.
That'll be it.
By things that we're not talking
about. What a great
way
to date our podcast. In the annals of time. People, scientists in the future will listen to this podcast and be like, this is the only record we have for how they saved data back in the day.
What are they listening to it on? Please be a cassette. Please be a cassette. Please be a cassette.
It'll be a tape.
If anybody wants to, by the way, we do offer a cassette subscription to our podcast service. Please send a stamped addressed envelope and a check for £5,000.
Yes, true.
Which is how much it will cost me to buy a tape deck and a tape in 2018.
Well, apparently Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack was the number one cassette sold in 2017 because they sold it on cassette because hipsters. It's a whole plot point of the film, I suppose.
Yeah, no, I get that. But who the hell's...
But cassettes are coming back. Audio cassettes are coming back for the old hipsters. A lot of people are releasing EPs and like local bands and stuff are releasing because it's really inexpensive to record onto.
You know what? This
and
is
people
my
are dicks.
Is I don't mind the whole vinyl thing.
No.
I get that. We're going off on a full tangent here, just to warn you. Our producer has dozed off, actually. Clearly too many
really
sliders and too much corn on the cob.
Hand Dennis trousers.
Yeah. He's...
Playing a bit
no,
of two-ball.
I was
going to
say
anyway.
Formatting a floppy, but... But yeah, I get the whole vinyl thing as an analog storage medium that has an infinite amount, potentially, of data. The fine granularity of the recording and the warmth and what have you. I'm still a digital guy through and through. Give me a decent quality MP3 or better yet,
I prefer film stock to digital films.
Yeah. The cassette? The cassette is a shit medium
it was never
for
any
recording
good.
Audio.
It was never any good. It just
listen to one. Go
was,
and listen to one.
It was a thing we had.
Yeah. It's like VHS. Go and watch a VHS. These were shit things. They were useful at the time, but let them die.
Yeah. Yeah. It was the only thing we had. We didn't have an alternative.
Anyway.
We probably shouldn't slag off hipsters too much, because probably half of our audience are hipsters.
Well, that's you, me, Tuva. Anyway. So that's it. Magnetic storage media. Done.
Bosh.
I see miracles all around me. Stop and look around, it's all astounding. Water, fire, air and dirt. Fucking magnets, how do they work? And I don't wanna talk to a scientist. Y'all motherfuckers lying and getting me pissed. Solar eclipse.
This has been the tech segment for We're Drunk We Know Things, recording again in JB's smokehouse. Join us next month when we will be recording N.
I seen a caterpillar turn into a butterfly. Miracles ain't nothing to lie. Shaggy's little boys look just like Shaggy, and my little boy looks just like Dad.
Come and look at our magnets, I'm gonna hit on you. That was good.